And now I'd like to introduce our main speaker for this evening, Damian from San Diego.
My name's Damian. I'm an alcoholic. And this is a full room here. You know, I want to thank Larry for giving me so much notice, you know. He let me know at 6 o'clock tonight I was going to be speaking, so, you know, but you can't turn down service work in AA, you know, and so we'll just wing it, you know. It's kind of funny when there's a lot of people here, and my sponsor, he had me speak downtown San Diego one time, and it was real gritty. There was a stack of quartz slips, and the room just cleared out. I mean, it cleared out. It was empty, and it was him. I was looking at him, and he's like, you know, and I was thinking he's going to throw me the keys any minute and tell me, lock it up, you know, when you're done, because there was nobody there. So I'll try not to clear out the room here tonight, you know. We'll see what happens. My story involves a lot of, it's got some AA-approved substances in it, and hopefully I won't offend too many people. It's got a lot of AA substances in it, but I'll try to keep a singleness of purpose. I grew up back in New York on the North Shore of Long Island, about 60 miles outside New York City, and it was a small town, you know. I'm one of six kids. I got three older sisters, a younger sister, younger brother. My mom and dad both worked; they were workaholics, You know, I had a lot of time on my hands. I was unsupervised. You know, I was kind of left to my own devices, and I was all over the place. You know, nobody was really. It wasn't. I mean, I earned all these gray hairs. You know, we're talking the 70s. You know, this is going back some time, and it wasn't like it is now, where you know people are. I mean, where it's things are real monitored, and you know where what's going on with your kids and where they're at. I could be anywhere at any time, and I probably was. I mean, most of the time I was. You know, I was real, real influenced by my friends' older brothers in school. You know, when I was in school, I remember, I remember hearing like bits and pieces of my friends talking about their older brothers, what they were doing, and I was all ears. You know, I forget about what was going on in class. I couldn't hear enough of that stuff. You know, what they had going on and what they were doing what they were doing on weekends. You know, I was all ears. I just, as a kid, I remember being real, real, real anxious to get that part of my life started. You know, that stuff really had me. Okay, I'll give you an example. I'm trying to edit this stuff as I go, you know. Okay. I'm over at my friend's house, and his brother's into some other stuff, and I'm like, ooh, you know, and all ears, you know, and he's got this on this, you know, metric device. He's got the school insignia right on there, you know, and he didn't even try to mark it out or anything. I mean, he's like, you know, what? And I was like, man, you know. Nothing, bro, you know, so I got that metric conversion table down real quick, you know, and I tried to, you know, follow in his footsteps. I mean, I had a lot of, the influences I had, my role models weren't exactly, you know, I had some role models that were sort of part of the, it was a sign of the times, you know, this is the 70s, I'm not making excuses for that behavior at all, but this is long before DARE or, say no to anything. It was, you know, it was get some, you know, and we tried, you know, we did, you know, that was kind of my mindset as a kid, you know. I couldn't wait to get the program rolling. And my first job, I didn't have long to wait either. You know, my first job, I got this job at the grocery store when I was 16. And 6 months later, I wound up in almost 17-year-old alcoholic heaven. That's they gave me the beverage aisle in this grocery store, man. I'm like, you know, and cases of beer, cases of other stuff, all this stuff, you know. And I was like, it's just a kid in a candy store, you know. I remember, I'll digress for 1 second. When I was in like 13 or 14, I took a trip out west with my dad, one of my dad's best friends. He moved out to from Manhattan to move, and along the way we stopped in Vegas, you know, and he was, you know, he didn't have any problems, you know. Hey, try this, try that, and I was like, yeah, okay, you know, I was all over it, and it made a real impression on me. And one of the things that I remembered was they couldn't get Coors beer east of the Rockies because you had to keep it refrigerated, you know, and so that was a real big deal. And we had I got like 10 complimentary cases at the store, you know, and I'm like, man, you know, if I put that out there, they're gonna buy it, you know. And I'm staring at like in a quandary in the back room, you know, in the storeroom, and having a real problem putting it out on the shelf, you know. Anyway, yeah, I don't know how many of them made it to my house, but I would probably at least half, you know. And anyway, it was just kind of like that. Anyway, you know, I wasn't real interested in school. I was just interested in all this other stuff, and that's where you know, I 2 weeks out of high school, I moved out to Los Angeles, and I met this guy, and I'll try to keep this story kind of brief and kind of compartmentalized. You know, I met this you know, I was working in construction, and I met this older gentleman who had he had all these girlfriends around him all the time, you know, and he had this briefcase with him everywhere he went, and he was, you know, he seemed like he, you know, he was always having a good time. He was always smiling. He always had his girlfriends around him, and I was like, man, what has he got going on? And I wound up hanging out with him one time, and I found out, you know, and he opened up that briefcase, and I was like, you know, I was really taken by the contents, you know? And I couldn't believe what he had going on. He's like, oh, he's like, look, take it easy, man. Back up, you know, slow down. You can see it in my eyes, you know? And he said, he goes, this is just a commodity that I'm making a percentage on. And I was like, you know, I mean, that was, you know, I couldn't grasp that whole concept, you know. I mean, and he said, look, you know, he gave me his little business plan, and I kind of ran with it. But at the same time, too, to me, it was never, you know, he always had, you know, he had the best alcohol, the best, you know, different kinds of mixed drinks, or, you know. He had the best of the best of everything, it seemed like, you know. And he said to me, he goes, look, just get the best of everything. And he goes, get the best customers and charge what you want, you know. And anyway, that was his deal. And, you know, to me, that was, I mean, it was, like I said, you know, it was never a commodity, and I just, you know, I just kind of ran with it, you know. I was working in construction. I got my contractor's license. I wound up getting a backhoe, and things were kind of going my way, you know. But every, you know, after work every day, this is by the time, you know, this is my early 20s. By this time, you know, I mean, this is back in, like I said, this is back in the late 70s and early 80s. And construction, you know, a safety meeting in construction had a whole different, you know, connotation. It had a whole different, you know, a safety meeting in construction in those days was something else entirely, you know. And anyway, beers would show up on the job sites before the checks would on Friday. You know, it was just like that. I mean, you know, people weren't worried about workman's comp insurance, you know, and the, you know, how much alcohol was going to affect that, any of that stuff. It was, you know, it was just on. And, you know, and I was just going with it. You know, I'd go out for, we'd go out for drinks, go out for just a couple of beers after work, and it was never just a couple. I mean, you know, guys could have a couple, and they'd go home, and I'd have a couple, and I'd go somewhere else, and I'd go to a couple more places. You know, and it just kind of went that way. And I didn't, you know, there wasn't, it was just, I wasn't drinking any more or any less than anyone I was hanging around with. So it just seemed like, there was a sign of the times, whatever, you know. I still made it to work every day or most days, and I wasn't too hungover most of the mornings, you know. And, you know, it was because, you know, I just went with that. Anyway, and I had a good time for a long time. You know, I went, you know, 8 or 10 years of hard you know, working and partying and doing stuff, you know, traveling, you know, had a good time for a real long time there and with no consequences, you know, and then I got my first DUI and I remember hearing, my first DUI when I was about in my early 30s, or about 30 years old, you know, and up until that point, you know, I had been really living, had been really just pushing it, you know, but with no consequences. And anyway, I wind up with my first DUI, and I remember hearing hearing the instructor in class, and he said, like 30 or 40% of you are going to receive another DUI within 6 months. And I'm like looking around the room. Sorry about your guys' luck. I think I had a second one within 6 days. You know, it was like, oh man, you know, and it was, you know, I mean, and I was off. I had just one excuse after the other. You know, that's a coincidence. That's just, you know, it's bad luck or whatever. But you know that. The pendulum had swung the other way, and it was just no turning back. And I wasn't seeing it, I wasn't hearing it. You know, not, I had all these excuses, and I was doing pretty well financially. So at the time, you know, when I wound up with the second DUI, you know, it was like, you know, you'd be going to these classes, and I'd get that one question asked to me that would just drive me, it would just practically drive me out the window. You know. And to the bar, it was, you know, the instructor, we'd go around the room, and he would say, how did that make you feel? You know, how'd that make you feel? And to me, that was like, man, you know, I didn't want to feel what I was feeling at that point. I didn't want to feel what you were feeling. I didn't want to feel any of this, man. I want to just go get a couple drinks, you know? And I remember during the break in the classes, going around the block and going to hit the bar real quick and pounding a couple down and going back to class, you know, this DUI class, you know, and... You know, yeah, it was like that, you know, and I could get into a couple other things that happened during that period of time, but it's, you know, I don't have too much time here. I don't want to get stuck in a disease too long, you know. The bottom line was, it went bad and it continued to go bad. I had to get re-referred from court back to this school a bunch of times, and I mean, a little 18-month program, I couldn't, you know, it was just too much in the way of all the other things I had going on, you know, my drinking and partying and doing what I wanted to do. And nobody was going to tell me what, you know, I mean, nobody's going to tell me what I can do, you know. And I just had that, you know, that after coming to AA, finding out that defiance is one of the underlying, the strongest characteristics of an alcoholic, you know. Anyway, some people come in here, they come in here after a couple, maybe a problem, maybe somebody, a loved one tells them, you know, hey, it wasn't my story, you know, people at this point, people started pulling away from me, and people that I had some really good times with, and really, really gone on some awesome vacations with, some really awesome trips, and they're pulling away like, whoa, this guy's really, he's kind of serious about this, you know, and they try to talk to me, and I wasn't hearing it. I started to compartmentalize my life, you know, meaning I would start partying with a group of friends, and then at the end of the night, I'd leave, and then I'd go hang out with another group of friends, and after I burned through those guys, I'd go hang out with another group of friends. You know what I mean? Or just kind of like that. I never knew where it says, like it says in the big book, I never knew how long I never knew how long it was going to, you know, I'd be going on one. There was a 2-year stretch in there where I would be able to keep it together for a couple of weeks and go to work and do what I was doing. I had this other side project going on that was going well. And then I, in that 2-year span, I couldn't seem, you know, I would keep it together for a couple of weeks and then go on one for a couple of days. And then in this 2-year span, it seemed like I could only keep it together for a few days a week and then go on one, you know, and it just flipped on me. And I, like I said, I wound up one problem after another and in and out of court and you know, this is up in Los Angeles, so unfortunately, you know, if you put the right attorney in front of the right judge, anything could happen. And I just kept this ball snowballing for a long time. And, you know, it was just, you know, I thought I was so smart signing my slips, you know, with different pens and, you know, I'm ambidextrous, so with different hands, you know, come on. You know, and I was just like that. Anyway, I can wrap this up pretty quick here. I just never knew where how long it was going to take me and how long I'd be on one. You know, I wound up taking it to the next level beyond just some problems around town to have to go away for a little while. And then I went away and I was gone for 14 months and I had to come back. I came back, obviously, and I was gone again. Not less than a year later for another vacation. And it was no vacation, believe me. You know, I remember one of the things that I heard while I was incarcerated was this guy said, you know, he said at an AA meeting, they made an announcement over the PA, you know, AA meeting, and just to get out of the cell, I went out to this meeting, you know, and I had never been to an AA meeting before, you know. At this point in my life, you'd think maybe you checked out a meeting, you know, took some suggestion. No, I hadn't been to any meetings. So I heard this guy say that he was a blackout drinker. He got into a bar fight and he woke up in custody and they said he killed somebody. And I was like, whoa, you know, I couldn't believe what I was hearing. But at the same time, too, I was thinking, you know, man, my heart went out to the guy, but I'm sorry about your luck at the same time. You know, that was where my head was. And I get out and I'm trying to get back to work and trying to, you know, to do this, abstinence thing, but I had no tools at all. I've been to that one meeting, and I've never met anybody in all my years and years by now of partying and having a good time and doing all this stuff, and having a lot of bad times now. I never became friends with, or was acquainted with, or knew anyone who had recovered, you know, who had taken the steps, who'd been to meetings, who had that spiritual, you know, who had a spiritual awakening. I mean, who had that psychic change. Nobody. I mean, you talk about, you got to be pretty close-minded and walking around with blinders on. And I remember hearing, once in a while, I'd hear about somebody who quit. And I'd say, quit? What do you mean they quit? I already quit in me. You know, like just that stupid mindset, you know. And I just need to handle this better, you know. And that's where I was the whole time trying to, that self-will, you know, trying to handle myself better. You know, I only need to have a couple, you know, handle yourself. And it just wasn't working out, you know. Anyway, so I did a geographic down to San Diego, and I was that guy that at, you know, in construction, I'm that guy that at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you know, you could be working like a machine all day long, but by 3 o'clock, you know, when you really have that urge to drink and to go get, you know, to take the edge off, you know, you're not real good to work with at all. And everyone's like, where's that guy that was here this morning, man? And who the hell is this guy? You know, I mean, you just like that guy that, you know, he's like sweating through his clothes before he's even rolled out his tools, man. Like, you know, I see those guys now, my heart goes out to them, you know. You just want to just grab them, brother, you don't have to live like this anymore. But at the time, I was that guy, you know, and fortunately, I never got hurt on the job or never got anyone hurt, but it was just, you know, it was just miserable. And forget about, we got to stay late, we got to work late. I'm like, stay late! These guys, co-workers would be like, man, everyone except you, you know, like, you know, I mean, it was just miserable. Anyway, I wind up with, coming home from work, and I wind up, with another case hanging over my head, you know, another DUI, and with other stuff involved, and I wind up, going through the court system down in San Diego, the attorney, this attorney that I had, he said over the voices going on in my head, like, you know, go get out of here, man, go get a drink, man, over those voices, this guy said to me, he goes, look, you know, he's scrutinizing my record, and he goes, you know, you got to get some help, you know, you need to go and get some help for a disease that obviously you have. And I'm like, you know, not too many other options at that point. And I said, you know what? What do you suggest? And he goes, I suggest you go to the Freedom Ranch. You know, go to the ranch. I was out of ideas, man, and ran it into the ground, you know, again. And, I wind up going up to the Freedom Ranch, and I went up to, I got to the Freedom Ranch. My sobriety date is June 18th of 2006. And I got there, a few days after that, and, you know, it was, I didn't have any idea what I was walking into. You know, I mean, I really didn't have any idea what I was walking into. The first night there, one of the guys who took 9 years, George, you know, he was staff up at the ranch. He was the manager at the time. And, incidentally, I want to congratulate the token takers, Matthew, John, George, Mark, you know, and Janelle, you nailed it. You know, I was going to tie it in with you in a little bit, you know, something that you said, talking about that coffee commitment, you know, anyway, I'll get to that, hopefully. Anyway, my first night at the ranch, I'm here and I'm living, I'm in this place, I didn't know what I was walking into, there's like 50 dudes there, you know, and, it's a 50 bed facility for 4 months, I come in there and I'm, you know, like foggy, you know, and I'm, you know, come shuffling in there and right after the nightly meeting, they called everybody back into the room. And you call 50 guys back in the room, into the meeting room that we were just had. And everyone's like, it's kind of like this right now. You can hear a pin drop. I mean, you know, the manager comes in all wide-eyed, wild-eyed, you know, and he comes in looking all crazy. And I mean, these guys are some big dudes up there, you know, some guys who've had a lot more problems than I had, a lot more problems, you know, and I had enough problems, believe me. Everyone's up there, and I mean, you can hear a pin drop, man. There's some big dudes scared shitless, you know, seriously. And he reads off 5 names, and he goes, roll your shit up, you're out of here, you know? And it was, something that they did. I mean, you know, it was kind of, I mean, I was like, when I walked in there that day, I was thinking, man, what did I walk into? And when the way these guys handled themselves and I could see the energy like that in the room, you know, I'm like, man, it really, really sparked my curiosity, even through that fog, you know? And I came to love George. I mean, the way that he put it down scared the shit out of everybody. Pardon my English. It was, I don't know what was going on up here. I don't know what they had, man, but man, these guys' attention, you know? Anyway, that was my first night there, you know, and I was on the E-bed at the time. I wasn't getting credit for the time on that bed, you know, it's just an extra bed that they had. So these guys got rolled out of there, and I'm like, well, I don't know about what happened to them, but I'm off the E-bed, you know. So I started getting credit for my time up there. Anyway, the next day when I went to class, there it is on the board, you know, that first step. The first word in the first step, but that first step, you know, and I mean, it was like an epiphany. You know, I couldn't believe it. I mean, I'd never seen the steps read, never heard the steps read, like I said. I never knew anyone who recovered. And I saw that written there for the first time, and it blew me away. I mean, it blew me away. I couldn't believe that, you know, I thought I was losing my mind. I was losing my mind. And when I saw that, and I realized that, I mean, that I'm actually suffering from a disease that, that if I take these steps and I try to do this thing, you know, that, you know, things could change. And I gotta, you know, I have to say, you know, like it says in chapters of the Gnostics, when it says, what seemed like a flimsy reed turned out to be the loving hand of God, you know. And at the time, I thought this is kind of thin, you know. I mean, but I didn't have a lot of options, you know. And I was told, as long as you can do that first step 100%, you know, then you could do this. And I looked at that first step the first time, and I knew that, man, I can do that. I can definitely do that with no reservations. You know, I can do that first step 100%. You know, my best thinking had gotten me there. One of the guys who had a big impression, he had a big impact on me now. He's the manager up there at the Freedom Ranch now. He said to me, Damien, I came through the ranch 5 years ago. You know, I'm a retread. I came through 5 years ago and my life changed so dramatically in those 2 years that I stayed sober that he goes, I hadn't even taken the steps. You know, I was all concerned about chopping it up with the fellas, slinging horseshoes, you know, the weight pile that I didn't take the steps and take advantage of everything this place had to offer. And he goes, this time around, I'm going to take the steps. I'm going to get a sponsor. I'm going to do the deal. And I suggest you do too. And, You know, I was like, you know, I respected this guy. I respect the way he carried himself, you know, and I really respected what I was seeing, and I said, man, you know, and at this point, you know, I was in, man. I didn't really know, understand. So I was watching guys around me. I was watching guys left and right. You know, they'd go out on a Thursday night, or on a Thursday. There was a guy up there. He would listen to. He's still up there. He comes up every Thursday. He's no less than a saint in my eyes. Big Book Rich, you know. And he comes up there and he listens to at least 2 Fifth Steps a week for over 15 years. I mean, that's over 100 a year times 15. That's 1,500. I mean, there's nothing I can't tell this guy. That he hasn't already heard, and I'm going to tell him, man, I'm going to just dump this shit, you know. I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself, but I'm watching guys left and right. I'm watching guys left and right, man, a spark come on in their eyes, you know. Guys who a week ago, a couple weeks ago, a month ago, had their heads down, you know, they didn't want to talk, they couldn't even get up in front of a room full of guys and say anything. And all of a sudden a spark's going on in their a light's going on in their eyes, and I'm thinking, man, I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, you know. And I remember walking around, I don't know who it was, I don't remember, it's not important, but I was walking around with a smile on my face, you know, after doing step two in my head, you know, and thinking about it, and I was walking around with a smile on my face a lot, you know, and one of the staff said to me, he goes, what are you smiling at, man? And I just had to laugh, man, because I've been restored to sanity, you know, and he's like, yeah, you know, so anyways, hey, that's all I had, you know, So I swore I'd been half-stepping everything up to my life up to that point. So I swore I wasn't going to leave there without doing this 100%. And without really trying. I wasn't going to leave the ranch without really giving it 100%. So, when I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God, as I understood Him, man, I did that with all my heart. And I went out to the cross up there, and I was out, and I was praying, you know. Just digressing for one second, you know, my mom and my sisters and my aunt and uncle, who have been praying for me for a long time. You know, they've been praying for me and praying for me. And they had to come visit me in some really, really, some really embarrassing places and some really humbling places. And they came to visit me, and they were always in touch with me and always trying to, you know, they didn't know what was going on with me, man, but they were praying and praying. Anyway, you know, when, you know, I got... And I skipped over a lot of stuff, but the bottom line was, you know, by the time that I did that third step, you know, where I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God, you know, there wasn't any turning back. I mean, I was just so full of regret and remorse, resentment, you know, that I couldn't even move at that point. And so, with a lot of encouragement, I started writing out my inventory for that fourth step before I even really understood the significance of it, you know. But I got busy and I was writing, you know. And one of the guys who made a big impression on me too, he was up there every Friday teaching class, was Paul over there, you know. God bless him, you know. And he had some really awesome stories. And I was up there, you know. It was really hot. I got there June like 21st or 22nd, 23rd, and it was really, really hot. You're in a place with 50 other guys, you know, people are snappy, a little bit edgy, you know, people are talking some smack, and I'm watching, we walk in for class, and the instructor is this guy. He comes in with flip-flops and a Hawaiian shirt, shorts, you know, and he's like, you know, he's just like above it all, man. He's not hearing any of this stuff. He's just looking out in the room and looking around and putting it out matter-of-factly, and I'm looking around, and I'm hearing all this, what's going on. I'm hot, sweaty, and I'm agitated a little bit. And I'm thinking, man, I want what he's got. Man, I want some of that, you know. And I was just sold, you know. So I started writing out my fourth step, and I was as fearless, as thorough as I possibly could, you know. I didn't leave anything out, and some of the stuff, you know, I had been. I'll try to get through this real, real fast. Touch on this real fast. You know, at one point, I had a DNA test on a paternity suit that I had against me, and it wound up coming back after years and years of back and forth in court and money spent and everything else. You know, I wound up getting with the DNA test. entered into the evidence, and the court, it was finally reversed. And I'm looking at it, all this stuff, and it still took years for this thing to clear up. And I was like really, really resentful about all that stuff. And in doing my fourth step, you know, where it says in the big book, it says, putting out of our minds the wrongs others have done, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. Where had I been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? You know, where was I at fault? And when I was looking at those, taking those instructions, you know, and really taking it to heart, I had to really look at those things, those resentments and regrets that I was getting a lot of mileage out of, you know, that I was holding on to and were really keeping me stuck. I had to really look at that stuff, you know, and really, really take it to heart, you know. And so when I went out there and I did my fifth step with Big Book Rich, you know, I was out there under a tree for, you know, at this picnic table under a tree for hours, you know, and, man, I dumped all this stuff, you know, and one of the things that I was advised at the time was, you know, while you're here, just dump your stuff, you know, dump it all. And I was, you know, I took that literally, you know, and I just encourage guys, you know, I have the really good fortune and blessed to be able to go up there and speak off, you know, and that's what I encourage guys the most, you know, to get through this stuff, man. You just got to dump it all, you know, you can dump it. And I did. It was like 2,000 pounds off my back, you know, I mean, it was like 2,000 pounds off my back. It was a relief, you know, I was like that Nike commercial, man, just do it, man, just do it, you know, trying to encourage folks to do it because, it was real liberating, you know, and I still, you know, doing step six and step seven, you know, where I'm humbly, where we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character and step seven, humbly ask Him to remove my shortcomings. You know, after doing step six and seven, you know, and doing that seven step prayer, a couple weeks after that, I'm wondering if I even did step six and step seven because my character defects are like right below the surface, you know, I was on a weekend pass, okay, I was on a weekend pass from the Freedom Ranch, and I called AA Central looking for a meeting. And I said, my name's Damien, I'm an alcoholic, I'm looking for a meeting, I'm on a weekend pass from the Freedom Ranch, and the guy who answered the phone, he goes, his name's Robert S. And we always say now, like, the S stands for service, because he goes, oh, you're a rancher? I'm a rancher, why don't you meet me at this meeting? You know, straight God thing, you know, I met him at the candlelight meeting at 30th and Grape on Saturday night, and I wound up asking to be my sponsor, you know, and I picked the right guy. I picked the right guy because when I left the ranch, okay, let me get back to the ranch after that weekend passed, you know. So I made a list of all persons, people I had harmed, and we're entirely ready to make amends to them all, you know. And I made that list, and you know where I'm at. I didn't have too much opportunity to get to a phone. I did call my brother up, and he's like, you know, at this point, my brother is like, he had it with me, you know. This guy had been in my corner forever. You know, he'd visited me in some really bad places, and, you know, he'd heard all the excuses and all the stories and all these plausible reasons for all this shit happening. And he's like, look, man. I said, look, I told him, listen, you know, all this stuff that you know, you... I said, man, I'll find this new way of life, and he heard it all, man. He heard everything except that, you know. And at this point, he was kind of like, "Look, man, you know, just show me, don't tell me, you know." And it was like, man, you know. So I got a disability check, and I was like, man, I just sent the whole check to him. I'll try to show him with that, you know. I mean, after I pay my residence fees, you know, just man, you know, I mean, because I couldn't even look myself in the mirror, you know. I mean, I could after doing that fifth step, but it was like, you know, you're hearing that stuff. You know, I'd been out there for a long time, and I'd really created a lot of wreckage. So let me fast forward a little bit here. So, okay, I get out of the ranch, I'm with this guy. He's taking me to meetings every night. I mean, he's in the rooms all the time. He introduced me to hundreds of you folks. You know what I mean? I'd never been to an outside meeting before, you know, and he's introduced me to hundreds of people. I'm like, damn, this guy, she's the president of AA? I mean, he knows everybody, you know, and it's kind of funny now. One of my neighbors is always giving me the needle, you know, because I used to drink with him back years and years ago, and he's like, oh, I got the president of AA now as a neighbor, you know, because I mean, I'm not trying to tell them. I'm not preaching, you know. And I know this is attraction, not promotion, but sometimes it's hard to not really, you know, try to tell somebody, look, bro, you don't have to live like that anymore. You know, why don't you come to a meeting with me? But, I'm not trying to, I'm not trying to drag anybody in here kicking and screaming, you know. But when I do hear somebody announce themselves as a newcomer, and I want to welcome that 12 or so or 13 or so folks who announce themselves as newcomers. You guys are the most important people here. And I want to also welcome anyone who maybe didn't announce themselves as a newcomer. You know, there's a lot of energy in this room, and it's kind of, you know, it's intimidating. You know, but this is a real deal. And if you're here, you know, you're in the right place. You know, this guy took me, he held my hand the whole first year. And I went through the steps again with him, you know, and it was all about service work. You know, it's kind of funny when we talk about that coffee commitment that you had, because I take this coffee commitment and one of the guys who I became really, really solid, I mean, really tight friends with, a brother practically, he comes in and he takes a sip of the coffee that I made, and he's like, what is this, tea? You know? And I'm like, man, hey, it's candlelight meeting, it's dark. I mean, you know, you know, back, you know, so, anyway, you know, I took that commitment and I'm following this guy my whole first year, you know, and it's funny because he could sit in a room full of people and we'd leave the meeting and he'd go, man, did you hear the pain in that woman's voice? Did you hear that youngster? Did you hear what he was going through? Did you hear that guy? Did you hear that person? Did you go around the whole room practically. Everyone who shared, he could pull it right back up in the car ride. And I'm like, he goes, did you hear this? Did you hear that? And I'm like, no. I didn't hear any of that, man. I'm hearing all what's going on in my head, you know. And he just laughed, man. He would just laugh, you know. And he's got this laugh that, like, he wasn't laughing at me, but he just kind of let me know that everything's going to be all right, man. Just, yeah, you need to be here, bro. It's a good thing you're here, man. I'll pick you up tomorrow, you know. And I was, you know, and you know, I created a lot of records for myself, so I had to go through a couple other programs to help me just sort out the wreckage. You know, like I've said this a lot. You know, you couldn't see my driver's license with a Hubble Space Telescope when I got here. I mean, it was I had just a lot of things between me and that driver's license, and I had to go through a lot of hoops. You know, but I stayed in the rooms. I mean, I drank every day. So, I mean, when I drank every day, so I'm in the rooms every day. You know, I'm going to meetings every day. You know, when you're new, I had to really, really reprogram this stubborn head of mine, you know. So at 2 years sober, I see this youngster and I see this kid, you know, a young kid, man, 20 years or 21 years old. And he's up there He's at a speaker meeting, and he knows that book like a champ. I mean, he knows that book. He doesn't have a story. No story at all. But he knows that book like a champ. And I came up to him after the meeting. I said, hey, man, who took you through the book like that? I want whoever you took you through the book like that to take you through the book like that. And he's like, yeah, okay, man, okay. You know? So I came up to him with a lot of enthusiasm, I guess, and he was kind of, whoa, man, all right. Here's his number, you know. And he's closer to age than you, than me. He's in construction too here. So I called this guy up, and he took me through the book, took me through the steps as well, you know, and he gave me kind of a blueprint to take guys through the book and take them through the steps, you know, and he really, it gave me something that I could confidently feel like I could give someone, you know, and just page by page, line by line, you know, and it was really, really awesome, you know. You know, jumping right in the middle of this herd, you know, it's a big herd and there's a lot of different personalities and, you know, there's a place for everybody in here. Not everyone's a speaker. Not everybody's, you know, the most enthusiastic. Not everybody's the most, but everybody's got a place here, man. And this is the most awesome deal I never could imagine in my life would be like this. You know, I asked, you know, I've had a couple guys ask me to take them through the book and take them through the steps, you know, and had a few, you know, a couple guys stick around for a while, and they've taken guys, and some of the guys have gone through and have jumped in and really ran with it, you know, and others are sitting back and doing other stuff, but I mean, this is just a unbelievable deal, you know. I was my sponsor, one of my sponsors, you know, I'm, like I said, well, did you tell your first sponsor that, you know, you, and I said, no, man, that guy held my hand my whole first year. I love that guy. I would do anything for him. You know, he's still my sponsor, but I'm a sick guy, man. I need a lot of help. That's that other guy who took me through the book and took the steps. That's my sponsor too. You know, I got a financial sponsor in AA as well. You know, somebody who's, you know, you know, if, at the time I was in a relationship and, you know, it's not suggested your first year, and that's for good reason. You know, I was already, you know, I was in a relationship before I got here, so I was hanging around guys who were happily married, you know, and who'd had been through some stuff with their spouses, you know, and I could get some good advice from, you know. I'm not going to go to a dentist for legal advice, you know, you'll meet all kinds of folks. I was able to straighten out a lot of wreckage by taking some suggestion in AA and meeting accountants and other folks who really helped me with some stuff, you know. I was a little bit in fear, so I didn't like really, really take action when I could have gotten some of the things taken care of in the best way, the most beneficial. But you know what? I'm not about to. This is the best deal for me, I couldn't begin to pay AA back in 100 years what it's given me already. You know, I'm trying to think. Yeah, this is what you get on one hour's notice. I'm just incredibly grateful. You know, the relationship that I have with my family now, my brother, who was like, show me, don't tell me. You know, he got married in 2009, in March of April of 2009, and I was coming up on 3 years at the time, this was a huge wedding, you know. It was right on a golf course in Scottsdale, you know, and it was amazing. And everyone flew in from all over, you know, family all over the place. My sister came in from Australia, and it was the first time our whole family had been together in over 30 years, you know. And my uncle, who had been in my corner this whole time, you know, my dad's brother who lived out in San Diego, and he said to me, he says, Damien, you know, a couple of years ago, if you made it here at all, you'd have been late. You've been over at that bar, and you found an excuse to get out of here early. And he goes, and now, you know, we're so glad you're part of this family now, you know, and it's just incredibly awesome. You know, my brother, after the wedding, his wife had a baby and it named him after me, you know, just blows me away. I mean, the gifts, you know, it's, this is, just an incredible deal, and if you're new in here, believe me, life hasn't got it hasn't ever gotten too bad if you're here. You know, just grab somebody, or just if you see somebody who's got something you want, you know, just talk to them. I mean, if I get your number, I'll be calling you. You know, so if you make a mistake of giving it to me, I'll be calling you. You know, but. You know, I give out my number to hundreds and hundreds of people, and you know, once in a while you get a call. I got a call from a guy who got to Pathfinders today. It was really, really awesome. I mean, just no matter what you're going through, this is just the best deal. And anyway, so anyway, I want to thank you guys for being here. Thanks for letting me share.